What's up, Atlanta sports fans? I'm Graham Waldrop, and alongside me, as always, is Adam. I can't beat Graham and Matt in 2005 anymore. Kalau, and we are Atlanta's own two Atlanta natives recapping the week that was in Atlanta professional sports with wacky-ass hijinks and analysis. Adam, how's it going, sir?
Graham, it's going very well. I'd like to go ahead and introduce our guests. I feel like sometimes...
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I forgot to mention we have a guest.
Well, sometimes we've had guests on in the past, and we'd let them just, like, sit awkwardly and quietly for, like, 5 minutes until we decide it's time to introduce them. So we got intern Jared on the show, folks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Being here, guys. I was preparing myself for the awkward wait, because I've been out with you guys. I'll just sit here quietly with my beer.
I can sense you looming over my shoulder. Yeah. I was like, no, let's break the ice from the get-go.
Can't have a loom.
Just can't have. No, and speaking of breaking the ice, Graham, and intern Jared, I think we need to discuss breaking news.
Breaking news.
What are the bigger topics of conversation on our podcast that we know a ton about?
That Dan Quinn is the head of the Washington Commanders?
Nope.
Okay.
We might have to change our podcast logo at some point in the future.
Why is that?
Hockey might be coming back to Atlanta.
Ooh. That is something worth mentioning, right? So I haven't been keeping up with it. Adam, do you want to enlighten the users about that?
All right. So basically there's...
We're not talking about the new offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator. That's a pure hockey podcast today.
Yeah, we'll start with it until my knowledge runs out, which will be about a minute.
You know, if that.
So some area outside the perimeter. Honestly, couldn't tell you.
Forsyth.
Is it Forsyth County?
That's what I've
heard. There you go.
Who the fuck wants to go all the way up there?
They got the green light to build like a $1 billion stadium, something ridiculous. Or they're waiting for the green light. They might have it. Not 100% clear, but hockey people are getting really excited. And the only way they would build that stadium is if they had some sort of promise from the NHL to bring a team here. So the idea is that they're going to recreate the Battery and what the Braves have done. And... You know, I think they think that now Atlanta has the fan base, bigger population, transients, a lot of up northern people. Hockey does well in Gwinnett.
Yes.
So that might be happening. But I was sitting there thinking about that this morning in the car, and I was like, am I really – like, I'm having a hard enough time following the shitty Hawks right now.
Can I really have the bandwidth to follow a shitty hockey team?
Am I going to follow a hockey team? Would you, Graham?
Probably not that much.
If they're good?
Even playoffs. If they're good, like, I like hockey. Like, if I turn it on, it's fine. Like, especially, like, the playoff hockey, I think, is super exciting. But I don't understand enough about the game. I don't want to put in the effort to understand enough about the game. I don't know. Maybe it would change. I didn't really get into the Thrashers that much when they were here. They were never really good except for 1 year. But, nah, probably not. But if it happens, I'll check it out. I'll see what it's about. Maybe I will get into it. But as of like right now, my excitement level for this is like 2, if that.
I think it'd be good for the city. Anything that's good for the city, I'm happy for. But
the city of Forsyth.
Well, it's greater Atlanta area.
Yeah.
Still. Intern Jared, what do you think?
Are we talking about Forsyth like an hour south of the city? Is that what we're talking about or no?
Supposedly.
Okay.
You said, I thought, is it south or north? We don't even know our geography.
Forsyth is like 15 minutes, 20 minutes north of Macon.
Okay, so that would be south of here.
It's like way.
You want to look this up real quick?
Yeah, let's look it up real quick. Let's see what the hell this hockey.
Unless there are multiple Forsyths or something. But that's
Forsyth County.
Forsyth County. So maybe that's different because I'm thinking of the city.
Okay.
Let's see. Be in McGinnis. Wait. New interchange construction at McGinnis Ferry Road. Express lanes being added to Georgia 400.
That doesn't sound right.
Forsyth County. Let's see where Forsyth County is. Let's just
because
do that.
If it's within, you know, if it's like Battery distance or like less, even ideally,
so
I think it would be cool.
It's near Cumming, so that would be north.
Okay,
but once again, no MARTA going up there. But they're building around. Apparently, that's where hockey fans live.
Right. They're doing. They're taking the same approach as the Braves. Like
and
you're saying.
It's not a done deal. Who knows? But. Thought we should mention it.
Yeah, so, you know, there could be something happening there.
Not a lot of passion either way about it, but, you know, for the most part, kind of dry sports week.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, we hired a new defensive coordinator, and, you know, that happened. And
you want to talk Falcons now?
We could talk Falcons now.
All right, let's get into it.
All right, so Falcons, since we last left, the last time we talked, Raheem Morris was hired. We were kind of shocked. I think that it happened the day that we recorded. Like, it happened like an hour right before we recorded, which was kind of cool.
Clutch.
So it was like a lot of raw reaction. Shortly thereafter, it was announced Zach Robinson is going to be the new offensive coordinator, who's coming over from the Rams, where Raheem Morris was coaching. He was the pass game coordinator over there, / quarterback coach. Highly sought after guy, you know, typical Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan from that tree, obviously. He's never been offensive coordinator before, but everybody was kind of like after him if he was going to be available. And once Raheem got hired by the Falcons, everyone was like, oh, he's going to go with Raheem. And he did. So
he got his start in football by working for Pro Football Focus.
Okay.
Like writing up big articles nerd about players. So yeah, he's sabermetrics, stats guy.
Mm-hmm.
That's good in this age.
Yeah.
It's not a dirt cutter.
And he's been with, I don't want anything to do with dirt cutter ever again. Entire coaching career with Sean McVay. So he's only been a coach for four. This was his fifth year. This will be his fifth year in the league. First time as an offensive coordinator. You got to expect that Kyle Shanahan / McVay offense to come over with him, though. So I like it. I'm fine with it. I think, again, it's just going to come down to who's the quarterback going to be. But in terms of, like, who was available, I'm okay with this move in terms of, like, where we are right now. I'm like, yeah, it sounds good on paper. Even though the inexperience kind of concerns me a little bit, but I'm like, okay.
I think it's a good combo, right? You got Raheem, like, who does have the head coaching experience now. He worked with Zach Robinson for 3-4 years. That's his name, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Making sure I didn't just make that up. So he kind of knows, like, what Zach's all about, obviously. And this was a pretty highly sought-after guy. There were a couple other teams looking at him as well. And it's like, going back to what I said last week, we're hoping that Raheem would bring. I didn't know who this guy was, but I said, you know, I want someone from that offense, the McVay tree, quarterbacks,
right,
receivers coach, something along those lines. And yeah, that's what we got. And like, Raheem is making moves quick. We haven't even had a press conference with him yet.
No, he's already hiring it. Everybody's hired
at
this point and the coaching staff, and we haven't had a press conference yet. That should happen on Monday at 2 p.m. apparently. So looking forward to that and hearing Raheem talk. The other news was we hired Jimmy Lake as defensive coordinator. He's also coming over from the Rams. He was the assistant head coach or something with the Rams. And he's been with Raheem Morris multiple times. He was with him when Raheem was a coach at Tampa Bay. He's been just a football lifer. He's a defensive back coach at Boise State, head coach of University of Washington, defensive coordinator before that at University of Washington. Apparently didn't do so well up there. Went back to the NFL. And this is his first job as defensive coordinator at the NFL level. So I'm less enthused about this, honestly. There isn't like a big track record here of like big, you know, success, but he is familiar with Raheem. I think the good news is like, in terms of that, is that he's bringing people that he knows how to work with, it sounds like. So that's good. Whether or not they can do the job, we'll see. This is the first time, you know, both these guys have been coordinators at the NFL level, and first time Robinson's been a coordinator, period. So, but I will say Lake has a lot of experience, seems to be well-liked throughout the league. Apparently the cousin of Ricky Lake, if you remember The Ricky Lake Show.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So,
He got that experience too. In front of a camera.
Right. Yeah. So, I'm kind of meh on this one, more so than I am on Robinson. I'm more excited about Robinson's potential. Lake, in terms of his resume, doesn't speak much to me, even though he's been around the game, obviously, for a long time.
Yeah, I don't think Lake really had a bunch of people knocking his door down, and it's certainly a step back from Ryan Nielsen. But at the end of the day, like, this is Raheem Morris's defense. Like, he's a defensive coach.
Right.
So hopefully Lake is just a guy who can implement Raheem Morris's defense. And I don't want Raheem calling plays on game day.
No.
Like we've seen in the past.
And with like our last two coaches, right, Quinn and Smith.
Do you mean defense and offense or just
either side of the
you
ball?
You want
side
him just coaching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You want your D coordinator calling in the plays.
Yeah.
And you want your OC handling the play calling offensively.
Right. Right.
Okay.
Is that standard, Jared, around the league? Or do most head coaches now, are they going to?
It's a crapshoot. Yeah. You know, you look at someone, because I think what LaFleur, I believe he calls his own plays.
Does in Green Bay?
Yeah,
in Green Bay. I think so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think, like, I don't think that's necessarily the wrong way to do it. Like, some coaches feel confident in doing that, and, like, it's that's what they want
to
do.
You got to be able to handle it, though. You got to be able to do that and do the clock management stuff.
Yeah, and
everything else.
Where I think it would be problematic is if a coach was calling plays offensively and consistently screwing up things like clock management, timeouts, and just game flow stuff.
We've seen that.
Yes,
so multiple times. If it's coming at the expense of that, then I think like a serious discussion would need to be had about you need to relinquish these play calling duties and narrow your focus to flow of the game and like kind of an overall kind of macro level.
Yeah.
But generally, if like someone came in the building and was like, hey, I'm a head coach, I'm from the offensive side of the ball, and I want to call the plays, I wouldn't, like, my stomach wouldn't turn at that idea. But generally, I do prefer, I think, coaches to coaching coordinators to handle the play calling. But, you know, I could see it going both ways, I guess.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I'm all for the, you know, the head coach being intimately involved, because, like, we saw, obviously, in the Super Bowl, you know, where Dan Quinn has no offensive acumen whatsoever. It didn't stop Shanahan at all. I trusted him 1,000%. You know, you need a coach to be able to come in there and be like, hey, we're getting a little too aggressive, or maybe we're being a little too conservative.
That's
like,
fair.
You know, the guy needs to be involved. He needs to trust his guys, but he also needs to step in when things aren't working or he thinks something's fishy.
Yeah, like you need them to be like tempo setters, kind
yes.
of, and be like, tell their coordinators, let's speed it up, let's slow it down, or like whatever. Give right. them maybe a more general directive
yeah.
of game flow and yeah. allow them to implement the specifics.
Right. Maybe when you have the ball at the 4-yard line, you know, and you're trying to run the clock out, just be like, hey, let's just run the ball a few times and we'll get those extra yards and then we'll kick the field goal and win the Super Bowl.
And you don't Sounds need good. To be like some offensive minded genius for that one.
Exactly.
But I will say that's the beauty of Raheem, is that he has experience on both sides of the ball.
Right.
So like, I think, you know, defensively he's probably stronger, but he's going to know what's going on offense and being able to contribute there as well.
Yeah,
it's not like he's just blind on that.
No,
and solely trusting.
And that's one thing I like.
Rookie coach.
Yeah, there's one thing I like about this hire is, and we talked about this last week, but sitting with it for a week is like, you know, he's worked with receivers, he's worked with running backs, you know, he's done all the things on defense, worked with DBs, worked, you know, been a defensive coordinator, he's won a Super Bowl as a defensive coordinator. Like, he's run the gauntlet of the NFL. Like, he profiles as, you know, should be able to do the head coaching job again, despite, you know, what happened in Tampa Bay. That was like, you know, 13 years ago at this point. So that's where we are. Raheem, Robinson, and Lake are your triumphant of coach and coordinators. And we also retained our special teams coordinator, Marquise Williams, which I'm not actually a huge fan of. I remember when we talked about this, I was like, yeah, he didn't really do anything to offend me. And then I was like, no, we did a bad job receiving punts this year. We received so many punts within the 5-yard line. Well, I was like, what the fuck is going on here?
Here's the kicker, Graham.
Oh.
2 years ago,
yeah,
we were like second in special teams under the same coach.
Ah.
And it's because we had the best punt returner in the league, Avery Williams, who got hurt last year.
Mm.
So I think that really just killed us.
Sure. But you should be able to tell guys, like, don't field the ball within 5-yard line.
What are your thoughts on this 5-yard line thing, Jared?
Well, I mean, I was going to ask, like, is it known if Raheem, because I agree with what you're saying, he is an experienced coach at multiple sides of the ball. Did he ever have experience as a special teams person?
I don't think so. I think it's just either defense, mostly defense and some offense.
Well, see, so then for me, that's kind of a bad sign, is that if special teams is kind of a weakness of the Falcons currently, and I get what you're saying, Adam, too, that a lot of it is due to this injury, to this kind of prolific punt returner. But if it's already an area of weakness and he just retains this person from last year, and if he himself doesn't have any experience with it, not that, you know, special teams is often overlooked, but it is important. And I don't know, that would be something I'd be looking at if I was, you know, a deeper Falcons fan of like, let's keep an eye on special teams because we just brought back this guy and it was bad last year and Raheem might have no deep experience with that side of the ball.
And I don't think it was like the worst special teams in the world. There's just number of times where like field position killed us, where we're fielding punts, where I was like, just let that go. And that's, you know, 85% probably a touchback. And it just put us in a bad position to do anything offensively. So I didn't like coverage was fine. I don't know if we gave up any like punt returns for touchdowns or kickoffs. I don't think it was like a glaring issue. Like with the Rams, for example, this year, it was a big glaring issue. They lost a couple of games because they blew punt return coverage. Maybe he's not a terrible coordinator. It's just those things stick out to me, little things like that.
Did you see, I think it was the Lions game on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
My heart broke because, you know, I'm a punter guy, right?
You're a big punter guy.
And, like, all the momentum was with the damn
Lions?
Who beat the Lions? Oh.
Niners?
So all the momentum at this point was with the damn Niners. And this punter walks out there for the Lions.
Start over again. Sorry. Oh. I coughed when you were saying something. Good.
So at this point in the game, all the momentum was with the damn Niners. And it's like, oh man, things are going terribly for the Lions. Like, they got no way to get out of this. And this punter just struts onto the field. Pretty bad field position. Booms like a 70-yard kick.
It was 75 in the air.
It lands like at the 2 and bounces like the direction you want it to go. And the special teamer flubbed it.
Yeah.
Like, he could have, like, caught it at, like, the 2 or 3 as it was bouncing around. And he just, like, lost his momentum. And, like, it ended up being a touchback. Niners score.
Right.
A touchdown after that. But it's just, like, yeah, special teams is important.
It is so important.
And, like, for a guy who was just, dude, just catch the ball at the 5. That's fine. But then, like, to
bat it backwards.
Yeah.
To anything. Just don't trickle into
just
the end zone.
Just completely screwed up and, like, wasted, like, one of the best punts I've ever seen in my life.
It was an all-time punt. I remember I was pretty drunk at that point. But I was like, holy shit. That was the biggest reaction I ever had of a punt in my life. I was like, god damn.
Did you see that?
Yeah,
I mean, it is, I think, by far the most overlooked aspect of football.
And for sure.
It really is a bummer how much the NFL has kind of eradicated the kickoff return because... Yeah.
Particularly the onside kick.
Onside kick is practically extinct. And just, I get it, the whole player safety thing and, you know, extreme collision speed, opposite directions, all these things. But it had an opportunity to really shake up a football game. It could be a huge momentum changer. Like, a kickoff return is so exciting, and we still have it with punts occasionally, but I'm bummed that special teams is kind of slowly getting erased out of the league to some degree, but it still is very important, I would say.
Let me ask you this, Jared. You're a Patriots fan, as we know.
Oh, yeah. Better believe it.
So, like, for the Falcons, like, I think special teams kind of back to our, like, high school childhood days a little more, and we had Allen Rossum, who was just an absolute monster. But I mean, we had a streak there. We went from Allen Rossum to Devin Hester.
Right.
And it's like, that was a very important position.
Mm-hmm.
And like, now it's just like, meh. Like, we had Cordarrelle Patterson. But I think he's got one touchdown.
He was pretty explosive, wasn't he?
He still is, but I think it is the rule change. Just make it, it's not as much of a factor. Allen Rossum, you got AR back there. Something's about to happen every damn time.
Yeah, like I remember in the Rams division round game I went to, he like fielded this punt at the 20. Made like 5 guys miss, easy return for a touchdown. He was brilliant. He'd get like 2 or 3 of those every year.
So like, who was that guy for the Patriots?
You know, for me, my memory of it is more for punt returns and not so much kick returns. I know that we had Danny Amendola for a while was fielding, I think, kickoffs. It was always, though, the punt returners that really sparked it for the team, as I can remember. And those were the Troy Browns, the Julian Edelmans, the Wes Welkers, Amendola. A lot of time it was the slot guys that would be back and receiving the punts and kind of making things happen. I don't have a memory on hand of like a prolific kick return guy in the Pats organization, but yeah.
Sure. So anyways, we have the same special teams coach at the end of the day. So for better or worse, there's a question from a user here I have.
Oh,
user question.
I don't know so about like, this. Did you field this question, intern chair?
No. So the Falcons retained a lot of their coaches. Like, not obviously the coordinators and things like that, but like offensive or defensive coordinator. But in terms of like assistants, obviously our special teams coordinator, things like that, we retained a lot of people. More so when you have a coaching turnover like this than normal, I would think. So the question really is, was this really all Arthur's fault in terms of like why we didn't get to where we wanted to get to? Because it says that it is to me because of how minimal the other coaching changes have been outside of offensive and like defensive coordinator. It seems like almost maybe not everybody, but a lot of people are back, a lot of assistants, a lot of underlings and things like that, that have been retained from the Arthur Smith era. So
I think I got 2 different ways to answer this, Graham.
If that makes sense.
And it certainly leads into our Bill Belichick conversation. First of all, you look at the last time we had a coaching changeover from Dan Quinn, and we did completely blow it up.
Yeah.
And we lost a ton of talented people in that who could have been our head coach. And Raheem Morris, LaFleur, Mike McDaniels, all these guys that we squawk about all the time who were in our organization that we let go.
Particularly Raheem, who was the coach before he left,
right?
Which is hilarious. Even though it's interim,
maybe that's like, just because you don't like the top guy doesn't mean he didn't hire some good pieces, and like, and we had a good locker room last year, the last couple of years under Arthur Smith. So like, you don't need to blow it up. And I think that that's what really came down to Arthur Blank's decision here, was that he didn't want to completely blow up the organization. Like, if you go with Bill Belichick, yes, you're getting one of the greatest football coaches of all time. And I think he wanted the coach, Bill Belichick, but he didn't want to completely blow up his entire organization that I guess he thought was on a good trajectory overall for 2 to 3 years of Bill. And like, just what that would have meant for just completely blowing it up. Everything would have changed. No one would be here. Everyone's gone. And I guess he thought we had some talent there. Like, I was kind of shitting on TJ Yates, I think he's our quarterback coach now, which is right. Nice. We actually have a quarterback coach.
Well, Dave Ragone coached quarterbacks, Adam.
Oh, yeah.
That's what Arthur Smith said at an interview one time. It was great. It's like, coach, do we have a quarterback coach? Like, oh, no, Dave Ragone coached the quarterbacks. So I was like, oh, so that's why they he's suck. Okay, great. Too.
Yeah. I don't know if I answered your question, but that's just kind of what
popped. Yeah, that's how you're looking. You said you had two ways of looking at it. That was one way.
No, I think I hit both.
Oh, you think you hit both of them in there?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So, Graham, you were saying that, do you feel this way, or do you think the organization feels this way, that by retaining a lot of these coaches, it is laying it at the feet of Arthur Smith? Do you feel that way, or do you think the organization feels that way, or maybe both?
I think both. I think that's the biggest... That's the biggest damning thing to me, because I think if they like despised everything about what Arthur Smith did and the people that he had with him, they would all be chuck fucked. Mm-hmm. Instead, you retain a decent amount, a decent amount of them. So I think, it was like Arthur Smith is the big problem. If we bring in someone else in here, but keep the things that are working, then hopefully we'll be okay. Mm-hmm. So I'm sort of piggybacking off what Adam said, but yeah, that's what I think. So I think, yes, Arthur was the biggest problem in the eyes of the organization. He was, kicked out. So
they feel they're close.
I think they feel like they're close. I think they feel like they're a quarterback and a couple of pieces away from being like, I don't even know about Super Bowl contenders, but like, at least you better be winning that division kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where we should have been this year.
Yeah.
That's how I feel the organization feels.
Yeah. So. I feel like Arthur Blank and the fans feel that like the next step is probably, if not, at least minimum playoff berth,
but gotta get in the playoffs.
Playoff win, ideally within like 2 years, would be kind of like a realistic.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Objective.
Well, it was supposed to be last year.
Yes.
Yeah.
This year.
But remember, the expectation for Arthur, according to that Georgia Public Broadcasting interview, was like, the expectation wasn't getting to the playoffs. It was just like progressing, moving forward, and hopefully that would coincide with the playoff berth.
And we didn't progress.
Yeah, so, get him out.
So Graham, is that your opinion as well? Like, do you agree with? But like the team stance that we had some decent pieces here, do you think they should have blown it up?
I want the coach to do whatever he thinks is best. If he thinks that those guys provide value and he wants to bring them back and talks to them and says, hey, what worked, what didn't work last year, and he feels confident that they can contribute to the organization, I'm fine with retaining some people. So I want whatever Raheem wants. What I would do personally is bring in my own guys.
But he brought in a ton of his own guys.
He brought in a ton of his own guys, but if there are other...
To
the biggest positions. But if there were other guys that he feels like would have fit better, then I would have rather him bring in some other people. But, I have no idea what it's like to field a coaching staff in the National Football League. So I could
see it being helpful because, he did bring in, top positions, offensive, defensive coordinator. You bring in your own guys. But then it's probably helpful to have those other guys who have been with these players for a couple years.
Some continuity.
That, know what makes them tick.
Yeah, but at the same time, if we all feel like the results are unacceptable, then that kind of makes me, there's a part of me that's like, blow it up. Like, no one should be back. Like, get this stink out of here. Because I think one of the biggest problems I have with this hire, marinated on it for the last week, is that it feels like the Falcons are the one organization, maybe not the one, but maybe like two or three, in the league where it's like, they need a culture shakeup. We need to rethink how we're doing things. Like, continuity may not be the best thing here.
Yeah.
So there's a part of me that's like, there's part of me that doesn't like the retread of Raheem because he was the interim coach. He's been with the organization. He was with it for like 4 or 5 years. Now we're bringing him back and maybe he's gotten better and that's fine. But it's like, it feels like if there's one organization that shouldn't have continuity, it's the Falcons. And I'm not saying destroy the roster, but in terms of like coaching, culture, things like that, there's the stink of Dan Quinn and Arthur Smith are still all over this organization from the top down to me. Because you still got Blank, you still have McKay. I know McKay has been moved on to Atlanta United, which is hilarious. He's no longer the middleman.
Oh, he has?
Yeah, that the coach and GM are reporting to.
Like the day after they hired Raheem.
It was so funny.
They announced that these guys, like Terry Fontenot and Raheem, will report directly to Arthur Blank now.
Okay.
Which is good.
Thank God. I was getting ready to get my crucifixion nails together for fucking Rich McKay.
Right. Yeah. So, but Rich McKay's still going to be like in the organization. He's still going to be doing stuff. Who knows? You know, whatever. But I'll take their word for it that he's not going to be involved in football operations anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is. They were talking about this on the Pat McAfee show. Some dude that was like in the room for the hiring of Raheem kind of like went on a Twitter rant, well, not rant, but just like break down like the whole process and just like further explain that the Falcons organization is a lot different than other football organizations because of this, like what Rich McKay does. It's not just like Atlanta United and Falcons. It's World Cup.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, college football,
NFL competition
concerts, like everything that happens at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Yeah. That's kind of what Rich McKay oversees.
Yeah.
So it's just like a little different than a lot of football teams.
Sure. And it's weird. And that's why I kind of wanted the blow up. I kind of wanted a completely new voice. I feel like someone like Mike Vrabel, Jim Harbaugh, Bill Belichick, proven winners at the NFL level as head coaches, can give you the shakeup you need culturally to turn your franchise around. That's been a fucking embarrassment over the last 10 years outside of two seasons. So that's, now that I think about it, the more I think about it, the more I'm like, I wish we would have shaken it up a little bit more. Not to say Raheem can't do a good job. He can. I believe that he can. I think he's learned a lot. He's obviously proven a lot over the last 3 or 4 years since he left. But it's such a Falcons move to bring back the guy who is like an interim head coach. I don't know. It just stinks of the same old to me a little bit. But at the same time, maybe it can work out. Maybe it'll be okay. But there's this lingering thought in my mind where I'm like, this just feels like we're just going to keep being mediocre forever.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I am so much more in line with that side of your thinking, Graham. Yeah. And, you know, before I kind of go into full-blown, like, frothy territory here, I think Raheem Morris can be a good coach and likely will be. He could be great.
He could be.
Like, I think he, for a lot of teams, would have been a great hire. And when the news of the day, when it was announced, day of, I was, like, sitting at the Albert waiting on a cheeseburger. And I see fucking, can't remember if it was phone or ESPN scroll, right. And I see it, and I was heartbroken. Because, as you guys know, I was so excited about the prospect of Bill Belichick coming in. But I was just bummed. I was like, all right. It was too good to be true. It was too storybook fable for me personally to have Bill come here, for me to be able to cheer him on with you guys. Like, it was just too good to be true. I should have known it wasn't going to work out. And then when that article came out about that you kind of referenced, the retaining of a lot of the staff, that's when I got really pissed off and actually was like, screw this franchise, actually, and beginning to get a taste of what you guys have been putting up with for decades now, where it's just, I was thinking about it today. It's like, what are the Falcons known for? Like, for the past 30 years.
I can go back to its inception, like 57, however many years ago. It's just either sucking ass or choking.
Yeah, it's just like I was thinking about it today, and you know, I say this with love to the fans. I know that you guys are committed. It's mediocrity.
Yeah.
They're just a forgettable franchise.
They're irrelevant, yeah.
That, like, pulling back and looking at, like, from a national perspective, like, nobody gives a fuck about the Falcons.
Sure.
Like,
ouch.
Nobody.
That's true.
Nope. Like, outside of your division, is there any team or fan base that, like, hates you guys?
No.
It's like,
I don't. Who?
Like maybe the Saints. I mean, Saints.
The Saints
division,
are in our division. Yeah. Of course, we hate each other. But other than that, no, I can't. Like, there was a period of success from about 2008 to 13 where we were relevant. We had a winning season every year. We were in the playoffs. We won a couple of playoff games. You know, like that was, we were relevant. Then obviously the Super Bowl run, relevant. Mm-hmm. The year after, won a playoff game, still relevant. But it's like, it's few and far between. The franchise never had a winning season, consecutive winning seasons, until 2008 and 2009.
Yeah.
It's just pathetic.
They haven't, like, stuck the knife into enough teams to be like hated or reviled by like other teams.
No.
And they also don't lose enough to be like lovable losers. Like say the Lions used to be, the Browns,
the Bears,
the Jets, you know, these teams that are like, oh, God love those fans.
Right.
Like they're just middle.
No.
And I really think Arthur Blank missed a really good opportunity here to just flush the whole system and just be like, we are done with this.
Yeah.
We're going to be about winning. We're turning the page. We're gutting it. We're changing everything.
Yeah.
We're going to like, and let's say like my fantasy comes true or was going to, you know, Bill Belichick comes in. It's like, and the same philosophy needs to apply to him. You give him 2 years. If he doesn't turn around, he's out. Next guy in. Like, I think Blank really missed an opportunity to just be a little more cutthroat and a little more like, we are about redefining this culture and winning and moving forward. And again, I like Raheem. I'm not saying he can't do those things. But the fact that there's all this retention, it just stinks of kind of, like you said, same old Falcons, nice, safe move, familiar with the building, knows the organization.
And he was the head coach at one point.
He spent some time with McVay. He's got to be good. McVay is practically like a fucking provision of the Rooney Rule at this point. It's like, oh, you got to interview a fucking McVay kid. I'm sick of hearing about the McVay trade.
He's really good.
There's validity there. Yeah. You know, and again, I like Raheem, but I think he's a terrible hire for the Falcons because I think they needed a much more drastic overhaul of philosophy.
Yeah.
And, you know, like from starting with Blank and his perception of his own team and this fan base that he as an owner has failed.
Yeah.
Miserably.
Yeah, and he's alienated.
Yeah.
A lot. And but I think he heard, I will say this, like when they put out that press release saying like McKay's no longer involved, I think he heard loud and clear what the fan base thinks of McKay and all that. But I also think McKay's the guy that prevented Bill from becoming the coach, probably.
I think that too.
Because I think if that happens, like there's no more Rich McKay in anything potentially. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Who knows what happened, but yeah, I hear what you're saying too. Definitely piggybacking a little bit off the negative side of my mind. I know Adam is all gung-ho, but it's been a week. It's been a week, Adam. You had time to marinate on it, think on it, sit on it. How are you feeling now a week later?
Yeah, I mean, I still feel good about it. Like, I think, and I hear what you're saying, Jared, but I think just coming back to Bill being 71 years old and the fact that there were 7 other teams out there with openings and no one went to them. Like, are all of those 7 teams just dumbasses? Or is Bill trying to sell something that isn't reality anymore? Like I said, Bill is coach, yes. Bill is, like, overall decision maker for an entire organization. And 7 teams, that includes the Patriots. So that's, we're up to, like, a third of the league that didn't want Bill.
That denied him.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think there's a couple...
So what's going on there?
There's a couple of ways to view this, and a couple of ways that I look at this. You know, Bill cruises into his first offseason without a job in, like, you know, 25 years, pretty much. I think his mindset was, I'm going to be selective about where I go. And I honestly think Atlanta was the only team that fit a lot of the check marks that he wanted. I think he was disinterested in all of the other positions and thought Atlanta was turning into like a lock.
Right. And like Dallas especially. I think Jerry definitely called Bill after they lost in the playoffs. Like, do you want to be the coach? And he was like, I don't want to go to a big media market anymore. So no. And then they retained McCarthy. I think if Bill would have said, if Bill wanted to go to Dallas, he would be in Dallas right now.
Yeah, I think, and because when that game was falling apart for the Cowboys, I was terrified because at this point, it was still a hot rumor, Bill to Atlanta, and I thought this is going to fuck the whole thing up. If Jerry Jones fires McCarthy, like this is a mess. But obviously, none of those things really came around. So I think it's a combination of Bill being selective about, he really wanted to go to a team that had a chance to contend. I don't think Seattle was a good fit. They're moving on from Pete Carroll. The last thing they need is to bring in another old guy. Like, they're trying to turn the page.
Yeah. A lot of ageism in the NFL.
I know. But, like, you know, when you're thinking about like culture changes, it's like, well, we need to turn the page into something new.
Right.
So Bill wouldn't be a good fit there. LA was said like he would be like not good with the quote-unquote California culture, which I've never understood that because the players aren't, like, homegrown from California. They're from all over the country. So, like, I don't understand that. But people were saying he wanted to stay on the East Coast because of his family. He wanted to be close to family. And he has, like, a summer home and or a winter home in Florida and all these things. So, like,
can you imagine geographic things. Bill, like, in his, like, cutoff hoodie, riding his single-wheelie bike to, like, the press conference and drinking his kombucha? I think that'd be great.
Oh, out in L.A.? The yeah. L.A. lifestyle? Yeah, that would be something. Maybe a motorized scooter or, like,
yeah. You know, something like throw that. A little bleach in that yeah. hair? I like it.
Yeah, and then his voice change. He gets, like, a Valley Girl accent no. instead of his, like, bitter, curmudgeonly podium voice.
We're on to Seattle.
Yeah. On to Seattle. We gotta take him down. So anyway, I really think it was like he was being selective. He thought Atlanta was trending towards a lock. Atlanta slipped through his fingers. I think he's bitter about it, by the way.
Yeah, I'm sure he is.
And I think he was like, "That I don't want any of these other jobs." So I think he's going to, and I don't think the other teams were super interested in him, to your point, Adam. So I think it was like a mutual lack of interest in a lot of places. And I think his thinking, I'm hoping his thinking is, year in TV, because he actually does have a really good personality. He just doesn't show it on the podium. Like, show that side of him, get his potential staff in order, and find a desirable landing location like an underachieving Buffalo or something like that. Not to turn this into a Bill
right.
future podcast.
Here's what's going to happen, though, is Bill, future Bill, is going to get that job, whatever it is, be it Buffalo, Dallas. I'm thinking something in the AFC, Miami.
He's not going to Miami. They got Mike McDaniel.
No, Mike McDaniel well, still
if the guy keeps losing in the playoffs, you never know. Yeah. But Falcons get on the up and up. We get to the Super Bowl. Because this was our revenge on Bill. Mm. Is us making him come in for twice. Multiple interviews, oh, thinking disgusting. He's got a job, and then disgusting. Just stomping on him, shutting the door. Yeah. Don't think so, Bill. So then he's got to get revenge on us. Oh. He'll beat us in the Super Bowl again.
Well, here is my...
I would be so upset if that happened.
My vengeance...
I was like, we had him right in front of us.
Here's the vengeance nightmare narrative. What if next year the Saints implode and he goes there?
Oh, no.
Like, what if something like that happens?
That would be a disaster.
I tell you what.
Because he is vindictive. He still has a grudge against the Jets, a team that he left high and dry by signing a fucking cocktail napkin. He still hates that organization. That's a 30-year-old grudge.
I tell you what, though. Like, you talk about, like, Falcons Saints, already a great rivalry. You put Bill Belichick in that? Like, that's just going to be electric.
Yeah, because then...
So much hate for yeah. so many reasons.
Oh, yeah, that is... That would be... It would be must-watch TV, but I think it would be dangerous, thin ice territory for the Falcons because he is a great coach. I think he's arguably the greatest coach in American professional sports history. He's like... I know I'm like Homer McGee, yeah. Pat's guy over here, but he's incredible.
Well, what are the things as a... Because I think the thing that kept him from getting a job was the control he wanted.
The GM stuff.
GM stuff.
I get that.
Which we understand. Mm-hmm. You know, it's been beaten to death. But what,
and I will say, Graham, yeah. I've been listening to the show a ton.
Mm-hmm.
You've been really spot on in your analysis of a lot of his GM stuff. So, mm-hmm. yeah, just to give you a shout out.
I appreciate it. But what are the things... Like, everybody fixates on, like, the GM shit, but what are the things he does really well as a coach that stands mm-hmm. out, that makes him that good?
It's
what could he have brought to the Falcons?
It's a lot of it has to do with his experience and his mind. He has this incredible recall for really specific moments in games that happened like 30 years ago. And like I've heard a lot of players coming out and talking about, you know, like Aaron Rodgers on the Pat McAfee show, talking about his relationship with Bill. A lot of these players who were against him talk about how when they're having friendly conversations, either before or after the game and chatting, he has this like deep recall of plays that happened the last time they played each other like 30 years ago. He's just got this mind that's like wired. So that gives him a really good depth of understanding potential outcomes of situations and how things can go wrong and how they can go right. He has a really nimble mind for going against the grain in certain times. Sometimes it backfires, oftentimes it works. Like there was this, in like Patriots history, it's kind of famous where they had a chance to like punt it away at their own end zone against Denver. And it was this like crazy wind game. and they intentionally punted it into the snapped it into their own end zone and got a safety on purpose. And there was a flipping of the field, and Denver then had to go like into the wind because that's how like significant the wind factor was in the game. It was something crazy like that. I'm not remembering it great, but it was a really like against the grain decision that worked out. And it was just like factoring in all this stuff.
Right.
And then in addition to that, there's the almost perfect clock management, timeout structure, game flow stuff where it's just you will almost never see a Patriots team or a Bill Belichick coach team blowing a timeout, lining up for the snap, not prepared, you know, just mismanaging the clock. Not knowing how to
field an onside kick.
Yeah, like yeah. That sort of stuff. But,
Dan Quinn.
You know, in recent years, it's been tough to see. That stuff has slipped away from the Patriots, even under Bill's leadership. Oh. So there is an argument about, you know, are his teams still smart? Like,
right.
That's been a conversation in New England. It's like, you know, people talk about smart, clean football. That hasn't been the case for the past 3 years. A lot of sloppy penalties and stuff. So I don't know. I go back and forth on this whole Raheem versus Belichick thing, but just the way I was kind of frothing myself up about it today, I was like, I think a more drastic and significant shock to the organization overall is what was necessary, yeah. But also recognizing that I am incredibly biased in this conversation. So, sure. You know.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, thinking about like who else was out there beyond the three I mentioned, Harbaugh, Belichick, and Vrabel. You also had, you know, other, you know, had a lot of these young and up and comers. You know, we heard a lot of hype around Bobby Slowick. I was a big Bobby Slowick guy, the Texans offensive coordinator. Apparently he impressed the brass really well, you know, immensely during his two interviews, but we didn't go with him.
No one did.
He went back to the Texans
and got a raise.
You know, I wasn't really high on Ben Johnson coming for some reason. You know, the Lions were one of the best.
Is it just a bland name?
I was just thinking about, like, again, just thinking also about, like, Slowick and Johnson. It's like, these guys don't have enough experience. I wanted someone, even like Mike McDonald, the Ravens coordinator, defensive coordinator, did such a good job this year, got the Seattle job. You know, it's just like, I wanted someone with that experience. I wanted someone from that big three to be like, yes. But also, if we're not going to have any of those three. So I guess, you know, Raheem, in terms of actual experience, was arguably the best left candidate in terms of if you want a guy who's been there before and has been around for a long time, isn't too old, can come in here and kind of make it his own now. There is validity to that argument. So I am getting someone with experience. I'll say that.
I keep coming back to, like, I saw, like, Jalen Ramsey tweeting about him saying Falcons low-key got one of the best coaches in the league. You got Mike Tomlin talking him up, Sean McVay.
Well, like, you know,
there's something to that.
I think there's something to that, Adam, but at the same time, like, remember Lloyd Pierce. When Lloyd Pierce got fired from the Hawks, everybody talked like he was Red Auerbach or something. He was, like, one of the worst coaches in the history of the NBA. Yeah, so, like, a lot of people, you know, you can have a great reputation, but you can still not get the job done and be quite underwhelming. So it's nice to hear the praise, but it's not unprecedented to suck even with the praise, too. So
that's a very good point, Graham.
Now, Adam, how do you feel about what Graham kind of alluded to earlier about, like, the safe, comfy vibe of the hire? Obviously, Graham and I kind of, at least Graham, I won't speak for you. Yeah, there's part of you that
does. There's part of me that feels like you do.
Yeah, but, like, I feel like it's just, you know, that whole idea of that Graham outlined of, like, it's a classic, like, safe. Everybody go back to your homes. We're running it back, but without the mustache. It's going to be great. Is there any part of you that feels a little concerned or upset about the safety of this hire?
To be clear, like, I would also be excited if we hired Belichick.
Okay.
But, like, I guess I just don't like to do revisionist history. I was like, yeah, this is the reality.
Yeah, yeah.
Or hypothetical history,
yeah,
I guess.
Or hypothetical. Yeah. Right. It's like, this is the reality we're in now. I'm going to find the reasons to, like, want to watch this team as it is and not just, like, be pissy that we didn't hire Bill Belichick. So, right. Like, I could, either way, like, I would find a way to be happy about it. What was your original question, Jared?
do you share any of those concerns of the safety, of the comfort?
I think, like, my initial reaction was, like, yeah, he's a bit of a retread, been there, done that. So I definitely share that sentiment a little bit, but it does bring me comfort just, like, hearing people talk about him in high regard. So I'm just got to go with my gut on it. It feels good. Feels like the right move for us. But yeah, I mean, Belichick would be great too, man.
Would have been fun.
Would have been good times. Fun.
It would have been weird. Yeah. It would have been so weird. It's just like, and we talked about this a few weeks ago, but it's just like, how odd would it be? Is like the guy who was at the head of the 28-3 collapse.
There's something un-American
about it. To be
it.
The coach of the team that he defeated in like the worst choke job in the history
of
football.
It'd be like Mike Piazza playing for the Braves, you know?
Yeah, or Joe Torre coaching the Braves, after, even though he was a Braves player, but after like beating us in the 96 World Series, and then like 3 years later, he was the, or 5 years later, he was the coach of the Braves. It'd be very odd. Has something like that ever happened where like in a major championship where someone beats a team and then a few years later they become the coach of that team?
The only thing I can think of is from a player perspective, Favre going to Minnesota.
Right. Mm.
That's the only thing that's like vaguely similar, but that's just what one thing that comes to mind now.
And that didn't really work out.
No. Yeah. They got to the NFC Championship 1 year, I remember, but that was it. And they lost.
Yeah. With Favre?
With Favre and AP, yeah.
And I think Randy Moss was back, too, that year.
Oh, Randy Moss come back? Man.
Yeah, he came back at the end.
Wow. Anything else we have for this subject?
I just would have been so fun. Yeah, it would have been so sick. Like, I don't know. I know it's like we're not talking about Real Housewives here, but it really would have put the team on the map and, like, really, I think it would have been a great culture shakeup, and I'm really disappointed that it didn't happen. But I did watch some press conference stuff with Raheem today back when he was with the Rams.
Mm-hmm.
Did give me like good vibes. I think he's like, you know, really, really charismatic. I could see his kind of leadership traits kind of just oozing through. So he's not like a disaster.
No.
It did like have that stink to it of same oldness that upset me.
Sure.
It does help that like Arthur Smith was like, he was hateable.
He was an asshole. And like the thing with Bill is like Bill is an asshole in the media sometimes, yeah. But he won.
He earned being an
asshole. Yeah, like Arthur Smith would sit in press conferences and he would flip-flop so much. Like he would say, oh, you know, the criticism of Desmond Ridder is toxic groupthink, and then he benches him 2 weeks later. You know, it's like, up yours, pal. And then, you know, like when Kurt Warner...
At least have conviction.
Yeah, and then he never stuck to those guns. We're not going to play quarterback musical chairs. And then that's what he proceeds to do for the last seven games of the year. You know, Kurt Warner points out, like, hey, your offensive scheme sucks. And he's like, well, you know, I wish the guy would, you know, he has an open invitation to come down here. Maybe he should solve the world's problems. Like, he just comes out, it's like such a dick. And it's one of those things where it's like, and that's why, you know, I kept grasping at that when we were losing, is because we were losing. And I was like, this guy's also a dick. It doesn't seem like he's flip-flops and everything. But if we were winning, it wouldn't matter how much of a dick you. Yeah, dude, exactly.
It's just, suck it, media.
Yeah, loser. Suck it, media. You can also flip-flop as much as you want, as long as you're winning. If the Rich McKay thing, you know, everybody reports to Rich McKay, and we were winning, I'd be like, this system is great. It's working fantastic, I guess. Let's keep it forever. Rich McKay can be a immortal vampire and become the new owner once Arthur Blank dies. Fine, fuck it. But it wasn't working, and we were very hypercritical of it. It's so weird how, like, once you start losing so much, you start, at least for me, I start grasping at anything I can to be like, that's a contributing factor. That's a contributing factor, no matter how fucking small.
Dick and loser, terrible combo. One of the worst two, like, traits to combine.
Yeah.
So you kind of mentioned some of them, Graham,
mm-hmm.
Like his dickishness and his flip-floppiness.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you guys about, because as we've touched on, it's like, it's not a complete culture shift. We're bringing this new guy, keeping a lot of the system. I'm sure Raheem will have his hand on the team and his thumbprint.
Yeah.
But what were problems that you saw from the Arthur Smith era? Like, what are things that, in addition to what Graham said, that, like, you guys are happy he's gone and maybe are indicative that maybe it's true that he was the problem?
He just overthought things too much. Obviously, they never figured out quarterback, with the exception of the 1 year they had Matt Ryan. Never figured out quarterback, and he kept putting, especially this year, kept putting Ridder in bad situations, you know, with play calling, like the Carolina Panthers game. It's like, all you need to do is probably go down there, kick a field goal at the end of the game. And on third and long, we're in field goal range already. He, like, decides for Ridder to drop back and throw a pass, and it's like, why are we doing that? Let's just run
the
ball.
In the rain. With in the rain. Had, oh, yeah. Interception issues.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's that.
It's
and
just
then, like,
stuff like that.
The personnel issues. Like, you've got, like, these three first-round offensive pieces, and you're not using them
as much as you should. We're doing jet sweeps to Jonnu Smith in the red zone.
You're too smart. That so that's the most exciting thing about having like
18 points per game
come in is to see how these people can actually be used. Like,
yeah,
Kyle Pitts might actually be a beast this year.
Yeah, like if we got Zach Robinson, who's from the Holy McVay Shanahan tree, coming in here and he can really unlock these guys. You know, Bijan Robinson only averaged 16 touches per game this year. It just made no sense. There were just so many weeks. It was like week two against Green Bay, he touched the ball like 26 times. I'm not saying do that every week, but you saw how he was a game changer. You saw how he could be the most dynamic playmaker on the field. And then it's like we abandoned that afterwards. And then sometimes it would come back and sometimes not. But it's like that needs to be a focal point of your offense in all respects. And it's just like the answers were there for him to have at least like a division winning football team. And he just outthought himself the entire time.
Yeah. Well, to add to your point, Graham, you would think they'd run the ball a lot more if they had such questionable quarterback issues, which was apparent all year.
They did with the Mariota year. They ran the ball a lot. We did run the ball a decent amount this year, but it was just like you could tell Arthur wanted to prove that Ritter was his guy, and they just there were tons of times that Ritter eclipsed like 34 pass attempts this year, and I was like, I think it happened like 8 or 9 times. One time he threw over 40 times, and it was like, that's just not a recipe for success with this guy. Mm. So, or maybe even any rookie.
So basically, we need to tell ourselves that Arthur Smith was the problem. Because if he wasn't, then we got a whole other world.
Yeah, no, it's like we have like terminal lung cancer or something, if that's the case.
I gotta stick with the thought that we have the talent on the roster. And hopefully we can still attract some veterans.
Yeah.
Kind of shore some things up.
Adam, where are you? I know we talked about this last week. How are you feeling about quarterback now? What do you want to do?
Oh, man. That's a tough one. I think I'm...
Veteran?
Can we get that kid draft from LSU?
Jaden Daniel? It's possible.
Can we get him at 8?
No.
I don't know if he would fall to 8. We'd have to probably move up for him.
You could maybe trade up for him, but no, they're saying... Everyone's saying Jake May and Jaden Daniels are likely going 1 and 2, if not 1 and 3.
You're thinking of Caleb Williams.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
LSU might be there.
Come on, that shit.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a lot of good quarterbacks. The Penix kid as well.
Penix is interesting. The one thing that concerns me about him as like he's accurate. Like if you watch Washington this year, he's a very accurate. He has a good deep ball, but Washington only played like I think 1 or 2. Top 50 defenses all year. And he got exposed a little bit when they played Michigan in the national championship. So I don't think he's any, he's older. He's got multiple knee surgeries. So he kind of concerns me a little bit, even though I think his deep ball is really great. Like he could be a good quarterback. I'm not saying he couldn't, but it's like, there are more red flags. Jaden Daniel at the same time also is like short. He's got, you know, he is a short guy. He's only like 180 or something. He's like 5'11", 180 or something like that, or 183. You know, you worry about his durability potentially, but the talent is there. Obviously, you'd love to have May or Williams, but you got to really move up and go get those guys.
That ain't happening.
Probably not. Who knows? I'm still kind of on team. I was on team draft a quarterback, but there's part of me that's kind of on team veteran, just given where the offensive coordinator is, even though he's been good as a pass game coordinator and all that stuff in LA, it's like, it's his first time being an offensive coordinator. Should he really be working with a rookie quarterback? Would it be more beneficial to be working with a veteran in this first couple of years? And then maybe draft someone, follow the Green Bay model, maybe get you a veteran and then like a Kirk Cousins or Justin Fields. And then you draft somebody that you feel like you can coach up. I can take a year or two to get his feet under him, unless you get Justin Fields, because then if you get Justin Fields, you know, he's still pretty young, so maybe you don't need to do that. But I don't know. It's well, even just going through it now, it's like the mind boggles at the possibilities.
Oh, yeah, dude, it's pretzel logic. It's so hard. But, yeah. Like, I think, like, the other question is, like, what type of offensive coordinator is this guy going to be? Is he going to be a reactive coordinator? And by that, I mean, does he build a plan based on the pieces that are in the building? Or is he going to be a proactive coordinator and be like, we need a mobile quarterback, we need this type of receiver? And is he going to make his opinion known to the GM or whoever that, like, this is the type of team we need to build? Or is he going to be reactive? Because he might want something a certain way. I don't know. Or he might just be like, what do we have? What can we do?
Yeah.
Which I think is the way you have to be.
I prefer what do we have? What can we do?
Yeah.
I like, because that seems to be more tethered to reality.
Right.
And is less based on the hits and misses of the draft.
Yeah. Because the good news is that you have Algier, you have Robinson, you have London here for at least 3 or 4 more years. Pitts you have for 1 more year, but you got your core offensive pieces here minus the quarterback, which again, I go back to Terry Fontenot and Arthur Smith not building this team the right way, but that's a whole other conversation. You got those pieces here. So now it's like, what quarterback gets the most out of those guys in addition to the game plan? I think that's how you got to think about it.
Yeah. Well, do we know who's available in terms of who is scheduled to be a free agent? I know Kirk.
Yeah.
Everyone says Kirk.
Baker Mayfield. So I think that if you can get Baker to like a 2-year deal,
like 20
draft,
million,
draft like Bo Nix in the third round.
I don't want Bo Nix.
That's what I'm talking about, though. I don't know college. I don't know what that means, but I like where you're going with this, Adam. Of like,
remember the last time you drafted a quarterback in the third round,
groom someone for two.
Yeah, I don't know why Graham's scoffing at Bo Nix.
I don't like Bo Nix.
I've seen him play a couple times. It looks pretty nice.
Oh yeah, okay.
You let Bo Nix and Desmond Ridder be our 2 and 3 quarterback.
Do you dislike fancy names?
No, not fancy names. I just don't like Bo. I don't think Bo Nix is very good.
What do you know about Bo Nix?
I think he's got a lot of, in terms of accuracy issues, turnover issues. I've only watched him play like you probably like 3 or 4 times, but I haven't been super impressed. Whereas when I've watched, Jaden Daniel, I've been very impressed by him. Like I would, if he can beef up a little bit, if you want to draft a rookie, that's the guy I want to get. Mm. In my opinion. But I would still follow the same path you're talking about potentially.
Baker with Daniel behind?
Yes, for like a couple years, and then you unleash him. Yeah, like Jordan Love was unleashed this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we agree. I think we all agree on that. I also, outside of quarterback, which is glaring, what do you guys view as positions of need on the roster?
Defensive end. We need a defensive end since John Abraham left, and it has never happened. So for the love of God, get a beast defensive end that can come in here and give me double digit sacks. I know they don't grow on trees, and it's hard to get because we haven't gotten one since him, but that is paramount to me.
Second wide receiver.
Second wide receiver would be up there as well, but I'd still say defensive end first. But yeah, like Terry hasn't done well with the second wide receiver. Back-to-back years, both guys. I can't remember the first guy. And then Mac Hollins flamed out after like the London game.
Jared hates to hear about this McVay offense. They run three.
I'm just sick of hearing about it. They run
three wide receivers a lot.
Right.
So we need some more wide receivers.
Right. And it's also, McVay offense is the Shanahan offense pretty much. So I mean, that's where he came from. So
which leans to a proactive OC as opposed to reactive. If they're coming in with a plan of three wide receivers on the field,
right.
We're shifting, we're moving. Then that means they're probably installing a plan.
Right.
I feel like that's underrated. It's like you think back to the last time we had a great offense when Mohamed Sanu.
Sanu, Taylor Gabriel.
Gabriel.
Was it three? Like three good wides?
Yeah. It was like Julio, Sanu, and Gabriel were all like, obviously Julio was a
Harry
a
Douglas
monster
running around out there.
Yeah, Harry back in the day. Yeah.
But you guys want to move on. You want to move on from those days.
Now we just got two tight ends and 17 running backs.
Yeah, and it's not to say like the Falcons have never done anything good. Like there are times that
I was being a little
hard. Yeah, I know. But
let's bring Julio back. Is what we should do.
Julio is still around.
He's living life in Philly, right?
Yeah, he's in Philly right now.
A couple touchdowns.
Yeah,
not in the playoffs, but leading
he was
up
not irrelevant for that team.
So Jared, let me ask you this question.
Sure.
To mix it up a little bit. All right, so your team won all the Super Bowls. I hear.
A lot.
Now you're one of the worst teams in the league.
Oof, yeah. Top two, top three worst.
And I think overall, you're okay with that at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
So, as an outsider, would you prefer to be the Falcons right now? Like, pretty mediocre, but like we just have been mediocre for years and years and years. Or how about those Eagles and like what they did this year? How terrible must that feel to be an Eagles fan right now? To be great and then just completely flub it. And now you got no direction. So who has a better direction right now, in this moment, the Falcons or the Eagles?
I would say the Eagles, because they were in the Super Bowl last year. Like, Sirianni, like, I understand the blowback against him and how it looks like he lost the locker room and they kind of they completely fell apart the second half of the year, or I guess after week 12 or
whatever. Yeah, it was like they were 10-1 and then went 1-5 after that, or 1-6, yeah, something like
they
that.
They were like finding ways to win, scrapping out games, and then they just imploded. But they did get to the Super Bowl and they showed up. Like, that was a competitive game. They didn't shit their pants. There was, it's like, I always think of the Cowboys in modern times, recent times, of teams that just shit their pants in the playoffs. Like, the Eagles are not that. And I think Sirianni deserves another shot to try to right the ship for this year. So I would prefer that because there's more recent evidence of the coach is capable of getting it done. The team is capable of getting there.
They also had a decent quarterback. There's something
to be said for turning the page. And,
yeah.
But now there's questions about
their quarterback.
There's questions about him. I'm just saying, like, his track record is decent enough that, you know, he can play in the league, even though he looked kind of broken there.
Well, it's certainly better than anything we have. But
exactly.
It's like, the problem is, like
you would take Jalen Hurts any day of the week.
When you get into this realm of, like, you think you have the coach because he had some success early. You think you have the quarterback because they had success early. But then you look back maybe 5 years later and it's like, oh, no. Those guys were holding us back, and like we thought we were there, and then we didn't move on.
This league is so hard, and we know like less about it than almost anybody.
I get stressed out just like imagine being a GM. That's crazy.
Yeah. And to kind of tweak your question a little, Adam, I would rather be the Falcons than the Cowboys. I'll say that decisively, with this team that just has this real, like, immediate baggage, recent baggage of being unable to perform in the playoffs. And they're just running it back again with Dak and Co. And, you know, like, that would, to me as a fan of that team,
you'd be so frustrated.
I would be livid. Yeah. Where, like, you know, I might poke holes in the Raheem Morris hire and blah, 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 and I'd love to be proven wrong. But at least it is something new. At least blank is making a change.
We're at the beginning of a path. We don't know if it's going to be successful, but we're starting something new.
But it's better than this like routine failure coming back again. Like, yeah. I would despise that. So. Yeah,
at least we've won more conference championships than the Cowboys in the last 25 years.
That's a thing of beauty right there.
Yeah, we've won two. They haven't even gone to the conference championship game. We've gone to three of those bitches since they've even sniffed it, crazy. Which I think is hilarious. Let's talk real quick. Arthur Smith, Dan Quinn. Arthur Smith went to Pittsburgh to be the offensive coordinator, which I think is hilarious.
Pittsburgh's like always had a boring offense, and it's going to continue to be boring.
It's like ever since Roethlisberger, Bell, and Brown left Pittsburgh, their offense has sucked. And somehow Mike Tomlin's a good enough coach to like sneak them in the playoffs for the last 4 or 5 years, but it's just not. It's been bad, and so they fired their offensive coordinator in the middle of the year. Their offense still wasn't very good, but they got two good running backs and Warren and Najee Harris, good tight end. They still don't have like a great quarterback, but I wonder if Arthur's just going to go like, all right, Najee Harris, you're my Derrick Henry, and just go beast mode that way, and then find his way to another head coaching position in the next 2 or 3 years. But it's an interesting hire that might work out just because he's so. I will say this, Arthur Smith, when things are working with the running game, he. You know, things can happen there that are positive. So
I think he's like a good football coach. I think he just needs a head coach. Like I don't think he is a head coach.
Right. He needs to be real coordinator. Like, and that's something that Tomlin's so good at is just having total command over the team.
Learn a lot from him.
He probably will. And, you know, he'll be like, hey, I want to run a jet sweep with Freiermuth and at the two. And he's going to be like, bitch, just get the ball to Najee Harris. And then he's like, okay, we scored a touchdown. Like,
Arthur, go sit down.
Yeah.
Tomlin's a gum smacker too, right? Like, yeah. I think he's a gum guy.
He's not Pete Carroll level.
Yeah, but he's on the border of.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, I can just see him be like, yeah, we're not doing that. Just like chewing his gum with his little headset.
Like, nah.
Jet sweep at the end zone? What are you, stupid?
Yeah. So that happened.
Going to give it your third tight end?
Yeah. Yeah, my favorite red zone disaster this year was Kyle Pitts blocking. Pitch to...
already funny.
Yeah, pitch to Jonnu Smith, that's tight end two, to throw it to Michael Pruitt, tight end three, in the end zone from like 4 yards away. And what in the shit are we doing here?
The Holy Triumvirate. That's what it was called in the book. But
even if it worked, it's still like, that's stupid. That's just stupid.
Do it in the other order, at least.
Yeah.
Michael Pruitt.
Maybe Michael Pruitt throws it to Kyle Pitts.
and then
yeah, you don't have your most slender tight end blocking because I don't know Pruitt, but
yeah,
I know that
I like
Pruitt. Sanu is a bit not Sanu. What's his name?
Jonnu.
Yeah, Jonnu Smith is a bit of a he's midsize plus. Yeah. He can block, right?
Yeah, he's not the greatest blocker, but he can block.
Never seen him throw before because I missed this play.
It was an ugly ass pass.
So that's what Pittsburgh's getting.
Yeah,
so
Pittsburgh's getting good luck.
I play in Pittsburgh. I don't know, cold weather.
We play
tight ends running.
Yeah, we play the Steelers this year, so that'll be interesting.
Yeah,
and it's at home. And then Dan Quinn is the new head coach of the Washington Commanders, which I think is so funny.
I thought it was Seattle or bust for him.
Yeah. So he was exposed big time in that playoff game against Green Bay. I mean, there are times when he was running dime defense when his team was down by, which is six defensive backs on the field when his team was down by 25 in the fourth quarter. And it's like, they're going to run. And they just ran all, and Aaron Jones just ran all over him. It's like, what the shit are you doing?
Like, dude? He was at the concession stand for like a whole
probably
quarter or something.
And so what was interesting too is that like a lot of people around the league and media folks too thought that Ben Johnson, the Lions offensive coordinator, was going to be the new head coach at Washington. And then he was like, nah, never mind. I'm going back to Detroit. And then Washington's scrambling. And that's when I thought, okay, maybe they'll reach out to Bill. Maybe they'll look at Vrabel. It's like, no, they went with Dan Quinn. And I just think that's insane. The guy is the worst clock manager I've ever seen. He's a good culture guy.
Well, maybe he's learned from being in Dallas, like we're saying about Raheem.
Maybe. Yeah.
That, under McCarthy's tutelage.
Yeah.
talking about someone who gets his team ready to play.
Probably right. Not the same thing.
You know, his culture stuff is like, it worked for us for a few years, but like when that shit goes stale, like his team quit on him. And just bad situational football awareness. We talked about it last week on the show. I'm not going to regurgitate that, but I just find it fascinating that they're saying, okay, we got a new GM in place. We've reshaped the organization. Dan Snyder's gone. We're going to go with the guy who blew the Super Bowl, the worst loss, the worst choke job in the history of American professional sports. Mm-hmm. And he's going to be our guy to lead us forward.
And how much did they just give up in the playoffs? 50, 40, something like that? Against Green Bay?
Oh, like it was like 48 points.
Yeah, it was insane.
Yeah, it was insane. And his defenses can be out-schemed by top-tier minds like LaFleur, Shanahan, guys like that will destroy him. And it's like, and this is what you want. Okay, good luck. Have fun. Good luck with that, and good luck with the piss-poor clock management and the absolutely atrocious situational football knowledge. Like, and I like Dan as a guy, but he will only go as far as his offensive coordinator will take him. Because Shanahan was the reason why that Super Bowl team happened.
Yeah, I mean, again, not to spend time on what didn't happen, I think Vrabel would have been really good there. I don't think Vrabel would have worked in Atlanta because of the Smith connection, Arthur Smith.
Yeah. I think he could have gotten over it.
Yeah, I suppose. But I think he would have been good in Washington. And I don't know. I'm with you, Graham. I don't know. He's just...
I think it's a really silly move. But, you know, that's their problem to worry about. But just... I will say this. Dan Quinn is the first former Falcons coach to be hired since Jim Mora Jr. went to Seattle.
That's interesting.
Like, not hired in general, but hired as a head coach in the league again. Yeah. And they got rid of Jim Mora after 1 year where he went like 5-11 or something. So there you have it.
I think we're probably about ready to wrap this up.
Probably.
But I want to end it with this little fact for you.
Okay. Yeah, you said you had a stat during the break.
Yeah. So what do Bill Belichick, Andy Reid, and potentially Raheem Morris all have in common?
They got fired from their first jobs, head coaching jobs.
Yep.
And then won a Super Bowl. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So potentially with Raheem.
Potentially with Raheem. Yeah. Complete the trilogy, Raheem.
Yeah, just keep that in mind. Just because the guy got fired doesn't mean
everybody gets fired. Andy Reid got fired from Philly.
Yeah.
You know, Bill got fired from the Browns and the Jets.
The Browns. He was coordinator with the Jets. Pete Carroll got fired from the Patriots as head coach.
Right.
Like, so, it just happens.
Yeah, they always say this in the league. It's like you're hired to get fired. Like nothing's lasts for it. Like the Belichick lasting 24, 25 years, Tomlin lasting 18, 19 years and counting in Pittsburgh. It's an anomaly. That doesn't happen every day.
Yeah.
Majority of coaches last 4 or 5, maybe not even that long on average, years. So.
So there you go. We'll wrap up this episode of All Football Talk.
All Football Talk.
Well, and hockey.
And hockey a little bit. Yes. Can't forget about hockey.
I think next week, let's just do all Braves. Unless the Hawks make a trade.
Unless the Hawks make a trade, yeah. We got to talk about the Raheem Morris press conference because that'll happen.
Oh, damn it. Okay. We'll do it all next week.
We'll do it all next week. Every sport. All right. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you, Jared, for coming by and hanging out with us. We appreciate it.
Just like Raheem Morris, you've really grown a lot over the years.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, dude. Yeah.
You learned so much from your years on your own podcast.
And time I spent interning, all these things added up. I came back into the building stronger. But yeah, I listen every week. Love you guys. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, give a shout out to your podcast while you're here.
Oh, yeah. No, I will not. No.
Okay,
no,
never mind. No? Okay.
All right. It's a movie podcast. It's called Dartboard Movie Night. I mean, this other guy, Drew, talk movies. But anyway, no. Go Falcons. Thank you guys for having me on. Wish you got, Bill.
Fair enough.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you guys for listening. We'll see you next week. Until then, rise up, chop on, unite and conquer, and remain true to Atlanta. Hospitamina sip.